Facing challenges conceiving? Experience compassionate care from leading fertility experts at Reproductive Gynecology and Infertility in Ohio. At RGI, your dedicated navigator is a call or text away for concierge support throughout your journey. Start your path to parenthood at rgiohio.com. Juan Alvarez, welcome to the Carrie Croft Show.
Thank you so much.
I already want to like change my demeanor. Like I'm trying to get a little more sultry and calm because you have such an energy about you.
Okay. Well, that's good.
It's amazing. I may have to just like hire you to come in here and just hang out with me.
I would love to do that.
It's unbelievable. So let's talk about, first of all, how we got connected. Heather, who was on my show, and she sat down and she was amazing. She's the CEO of her own company called Gebbin Communications.
That's right.
And she was speaking so highly of you throughout the show that I was like, who is this Juan Alvarez you speak of? And that was, I reached out and you so kindly obliged to come on the show. And now here we are.
Of course, I'm delighted to,
to have you. And this is what I love so much about this show is just, you know, 3 months ago, we had no idea who the other person was. And now here we are.
Absolutely.
The universe brought us together.
Yes, our lovely community.
So first question, has your demeanor always been like the water? Like very calm. Mm. Have you always sort of been a calm presence?
Not at all.
Not at all. So when you were younger, in child form, growing into to young adulthood, how did your personality, just the rough part of your personality, differ?
Like, well, I went through different stages, you know. But like, I as a teenager and a young adult, I was like much more energetic, I think, and complex, you know.
I'm always so intrigued by people who live in this mindfulness world. Like I dip in and out, right? So I'm like an asshole and I'm on 10 and I'm doing all this. Then I'm like, oh wait, I gotta center and I gotta be mindful. And then I you know, pull myself back in and then I go back to over here doing the things. But you literally are centered in mindfulness, but not just mindfulness, but leadership. So leaders and mindfulness, that's sort of where you live, which is very fascinating. But before we get into that part, I want to go all the way back because something you put on your intake form, a lot of things were interesting, but you said something about being 6 years old. So a long time ago, what was that? Probably what? 28 years ago?
Oh yeah. Thank you. You're so kind.
You were bullied. But by a teacher? Mm-hmm. Oh, and you're from Mallorca.
Right. I'm from Mallorca, yes.
An island in Spain. So what did that look like, being bullied by a teacher? What can you share about that experience?
It was very tough because you don't quite understand, you know, what happens. Like the short story, I had asthma and like a very bad when I was a kid, a small kid. So, and this teacher had two birds in a cage in the classroom, and he loved those birds and he would play with them, with the kids. And it was like part of his whole thing. He was a priest. It was a Catholic school. And I started having like very bad asthma attacks at night. And it turned out that it was the birds, that the feathers of the birds, and I was allergic, and that prompted those attacks. So at some point, he had to remove the birds from the class because like I could not coexist with them, and he got very bitter about it. And then he like took it on me. So then he ridiculed me, mocked me in front of the class, and he put me in a separate table for some time. And every time I made mistakes with some of the things that we were doing in class, he would again ridicule me and things like that. So I started to develop a lot of fear. Yeah.
Because were you able to talk about it with anybody? Like, could you go home and tell your parents, or did you just completely shut down because this was a leadership figure in your life?
Yes, yes. No, I did. I did not share. No.
And the other kids in the class were just like, "Ooh, glad it's not me." No one, you didn't talk to anybody.
Mm-mm.
And so how long did that go on?
For a year, the whole, my first grade. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then he goes away, mm-hmm. and then this follows you.
But that was my first year in school.
Yes.
So then I kind of like, it's being a little kid, like I thought, like, this is going to be like this forever. So when I went into my second year, which I had a different teacher, I just didn't know, I didn't trust them. So I just retreated and became invisible so I wouldn't get attacked or anything like
all
that.
All over these damn birds.
Yeah.
I mean, geez, you know, you think about that, you're like, wow. So when did you crack open about that? Where you're like, okay, this really traumatized me and now I'm going to examine it. When did that happen?
I don't think like I fully understood until many years later when I was an adult how that was holding me back in life, like some fears I had of like presenting work, even when I was the CEO of a company, you know, many years later, I started then connecting that's like why I'm so scared to do this or that. And then I did some work to overcome it. But like I carried with me for a long time, I think, as a part of an imprint that was left in my personality, you know.
Isn't it wild?
Yeah.
You know, just the people that cross our paths mm-hmm. just so randomly mm-hmm. can make such a fault line or an imprint in who we are. It's really wild.
Certainly, yes.
I mean,
yes.
That guy
in
had
a positive way too.
Oh, and in a negative absolutely,
way.
But
in this case, that was.
But Birdman, he had some screws loose. Like, let's be honest. You know, like yes. That's weird mm-hmm. and very reckless,
right?
And misplaced. And so here you are, this sweet, you know, 6-year-old little boy who's whole. You know, he's just like setting the tone.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Of course, like he had probably some issues, and like also, you know, this is like 40 some years ago in Spain. So teachers were allowed to do yeah. things that today would be considered illegal.
Of course. Yeah. And then another thing you had mentioned as just a huge thing for you is when you were 18, mm-hmm. your dad was diagnosed with, he had a brain tumor.
Yes.
Talk about that, because that's a lot for anyone.
Yes.
For an 18-year-old young man
yeah.
to cope with and deal with, and how did that sort of manifest?
It was very difficult. Like I was in Seville, which is a city in the south of Spain, freshman in college. I was partying and having fun and not a worry in the world other than my grades. And last day of school, I called home to say, hey, I'm done. Everything went well. I passed all my exams, ready to have fun with my friends for the summer. And then my mom told me, like, yeah, you come home because we need to share some news with you. And I went back home and they were about ready to get my dad into surgery, like in those days. Then everything changed after that. He came out of the surgery half paralyzed and with difficulties communicating. And I became like, well, I had to renounce to my school, like come back to Mallorca. And I started taking care of him at home. And then I got into a different college. The next course, completely different degree, completely different. And my life was completely upside down, of course. Mm-hmm.
And at 18, not being able to really process, like being resentful maybe, or being like, oh, I have to go do this. Did you have that sort of foresight at that age to be like, okay, I get to spend this time with him? Like how? What was your perspective, or were you just like kind of going through the motions?
I was totally ignorant, not giving much thought to anything, like living in the present moment, so to speak, but not as I do now intentionally. Just like I never gave too much thought to anything. I just went with it. I was not particularly angry or devastated. I think I was kind of in shock for a long time. not even, I didn't even have, like, I don't have memories of being, like, scared that my dad was going to die until maybe 6 or 7 months into it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I kind of just took it, accepted it, and went with it. And, of course, I was sad that I had to leave my friends and everything in Seville, but, like, I went with it, you know?
Mm-hmm. How was your mom? Were you were also probably taking care of her?
Yes. Yes, she was not dealing with it very well. She was very, very scared. She would rely on me quite a bit for everything, you
know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot to go through at 18.
Yeah, that was very tough. Very tough.
The next lily pad that you had mentioned was when you were in your 30s,
mm-hmm.
and you were divorced,
mm-hmm.
and that you also ran into some financial trouble. So mm-hmm. this sounds like another sort of whoa, serious situation. So mm-hmm. what can you share about that time?
That time was even worse, I think, because I was more like a mature person, kind of like 30, 29, 30. And like in that moment, it was like my whole world kind of collapsed, you know, like all of the sudden I break up with my wife. She takes my kids away and she goes to a different city because she's from there. She wanted to be with her family and have some more support. Because we were living in Mallorca and she didn't have any community there, you know, it was all my territory, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously I understood she wanted to go, but like all of the sudden I my kids were very young and they went away, and the financial agreements for the divorce were very tough for me. And also the business that I was running got into a lot of difficulties. So, and all of the sudden, my whole world was shaken quite a bit.
Yeah,
and
divorce,
I felt very, like, lost. Yeah, very, very lost and very scared.
Well, because I think divorce in and of itself is like a death. But then to have your kids removed from your proximity,
mm-hmm.
you really are alone in the world.
Mm-hmm.
How often were you able to see them?
I would fly like twice a month or something like that. But like, yeah, not enough.
So how were you able to then, because you were a CEO of a company. So mm-hmm. you were, in spite of that going on, you were able to have a successful career.
Mm-hmm.
Where did that line up with that situation?
Like I started being a CEO very young, like right after my father passed. I inherited his mm-hmm. businesses and started taking care of responsibilities very, very early. So by the time I was 30, I was a quite seasoned CEO because I had already been at it for 11 years or so. And it was my job. I didn't enjoy it particularly. Or like take a lot of pleasure in that, but I was good at it. I think I learned how to run companies. So
yeah.
Yeah.
So when did you have this aha moment
mm-hmm.
that led you to this journey and mm-hmm. path that you're on today with the leadership and the mindfulness coaching?
Right. Like I think when you look back to my life, like the whole life journey has been preparing me for this, taking responsibilities in business so early, becoming a CEO when I was 19, having not a clue of what I was doing, that brought me into a lot of conflict and stress and anxiety and depression. So that led me to find things that could help me. And therapy, all sorts of like techniques and disciplines. And that brought me to mindfulness and meditation. I started very, very young learning about philosophy and practice of meditation. And throughout all of my career as a CEO, that was a part of my life. I was going to retreats with a monk that taught me, and I was learning, but I didn't took it very seriously. I didn't integrate all of the things that I've learned until that crisis when I was in my 30s. That's when I started finally taking it seriously and integrating this practice into my life, which helped me very much.
Let's talk about this monk, because I mean, who gets the opportunity to like hang out with a monk on a mountain?
Yeah.
Right? No wonder you're so zen-like. So how do you meet the monk? Mm-hmm. And then what, can you describe, like, help us visualize what that even looks like?
No, it's a very, like, very, not very sophisticated or romantic situation. Like, he was a regular guy from Spain in Madrid that he had some issues, and he faced some adversity when he was young. And because of that, he decided to get a backpack and go travel the world for a little bit. And then in his travels, he arrived to Nepal and he stayed for 20 years as a monk in a monastery in Nepal. So then after those 20 years, he decided to come back to Spain, to quit being a monk. And I met him right after he came back to Spain. So he was a monk for 20 years in Nepal, in a monastery with the Dalai Lama. And then he came back to Spain and started teaching meditation to people. And I met him there in Madrid.
What did he wear?
No, regular Anything? Clothes.
Okay, so yes, I have a whole thing in my head.
Right, right.
That he was quiet, like, that he didn't talk for certain periods of time, that he's wearing like a brown, like, robe with a rope around. Like, I'm making this whole thing in my head that you guys are like out in the mountain. But I'm sure it was pretty cool.
He was like that. He was like what you would expect from a person that lived in a monastery for 20 years. But his appearance, you would not tell. Like, you would, it just looks like a regular guy. But we did a lot. We did work a lot in the mountains, and we went on a lot of retreats and spent a lot of time in secluded spaces practicing and things like that. Yeah.
Can we go back and touch on what you said about anxiety and depression? Because that's a huge topic for so many people, and I think it's safe to say a lot of people have some form of either one at some point in time in their life. What was it like for you in general? Mm-hmm. Were you normally depressed? Were you normally anxious? Like, how did you normally navigate those two things in your life?
It all started with the more like the anxiety for me. Being exposed to so many responsibilities very young was very stressful, and I didn't know how to manage all of that. I would wake up every day and like my mind would spin and spin about all the things I had to do, all the things I needed to figure out that I didn't know how to. Almost I didn't sleep for 2 years, just like trying to get a hold of how to run those companies. And I had a lot of fear of screwing up something and not being able to like to ruin my family or something like that, you know. And I was diagnosed with pervasive anxiety disorder. Like my mind was running all the time with catastrophic scenarios, potential things that could go wrong. And since I woke up, you know, I was in that state of anxiety and fear. I had attacks sometimes where I had difficulty breathing and things like that. But it was like a baseline of anxiety all the time. And I think that led me into depressive states every now and then, like that kind of a state where you don't, you cannot function. Like you don't see the purpose of anything. You don't see the light at the end of the tunnel. You don't see why should you be in the world. And like you just simply stay home in a bed. And like I missed meetings. I missed all sort of responsibilities, just like hid kind of like in my bed for maybe a couple of days. And it was very tough.
Yeah.
And I was like that for many years. Yeah.
Were you having like suicidal thoughts?
Yeah. Yeah. Certainly.
Okay, but never did like any attempts?
No, I never attempted it, but I crossed my mind several times. Yeah.
Do you feel like looking back, like before your dad passed away, did you have the beginnings of those things still? Or do you think that his death might have been the impetus for a lot of that? Like, oh my gosh, I'm carrying this load. I'm too young. I'm not worthy. My dad should be here. This is too much.
Right. It was definitely the inflection point. Before then, I never showed any indications of that.
Mm-hmm. Were you medicating?
Yeah. Yes. I was taking anxiety medication daily several times, even taking too much. And then I was under antidepressants as well for some years too. Yeah.
So coming to find this meditation and this stillness in your mind has literally changed the game.
That's what's cured me completely. Yes.
Do you feel any anxiety anymore or depression?
No.
Not even.
No, I mean, I've experienced moments of anxiety like any human being, you know, under stressful situations or something like that. But like not healthy, like moments of anxiety, but nothing like the constant. That's I've been anxiety free for 14 or 15 years now.
Now, did you do anything else in that anxious, depressive state, like alcohol?
Yes.
So you were drinking too much?
Yes, certainly.
Which doesn't help, right? That's liquid depression
on
top of depression makes you anxious. Okay.
Yeah.
And so that's not something you do anymore, which helps too.
No.
It's so crazy. It's like so mind-blowing to me how you really can change. I mean, your whole demeanor, your energy, everything about you just like is so, I can feel it. Mm-hmm. And you did that all through the power of like what's between your two ears.
Yes. It's just, it's a practice, you know, when you understand the nature of your problems, when you understand how anxiety is born, and then you have the key to dissolve it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like that came through. It wasn't pretty. And it wasn't like fast, but like that life crisis in my early 30s prompted me to take this practice seriously, which was something I've never done before. And then through that, in a year or so, I totally flipped the situation, and I was cured, so to speak.
With not on the anxiety meds or anything anymore?
No.
So you didn't come here, like you said you moved here in 2009, was it?
Mm-hmm.
So you've only been here
15 years. Yeah.
16 years. Mm-hmm. So what brought you here?
My wife.
Your wife. Manda?
Yes, Manda, yeah.
Now, what I will say, because Manda's going to be listening to this, I hope, but on the intake form, when you wrote about her, you said it was the best thing to happen to you. And it kind of made me tear up a little bit. I thought that was very romantic and sweet.
That's exactly how I feel about it.
I love that. You met her in Prague?
We met in Prague, yeah.
That sounds romantic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It was lovely. I was there for a business meeting. She was traveling around Europe, and we happened to be in the same bar at the same time.
And the rest is history.
Mm-hmm.
So you move here.
Yes, a year after meeting her.
So when you moved here, did you do the mindfulness thing right away? Like, how did you get into the mindfulness coaching?
Oh, no, that was after. That was later.
Okay.
Yes. Here first, I got a job as the CEO of a company in Boston.
Ah.
And I lived there with Manda for several years. And there was when like I started to integrate my coaching and like the mindfulness, and it started to, like the inception of my coaching practice and how I work nowadays was born.
How was it born?
How was it? I think with some discomfort, of course, you know, like life kind of moves you forward always like through challenge. So as I said, I became a business person and acquired some skills, and I was kind of good at it. But it wasn't fulfilling for me, or not something that, like, I really valued like I just did it because I didn't know what else I could do, and because it paid the bills. But then in those years, that's why I also said in the intake form that coming to America was very important for me, because I think it was a happy mix of many things, you know, being in the U.S., with the entrepreneurial spirit and like this positivity and optimism, everything is possible, you can do whatever you want type of culture. That was new to me. Like in Europe, we do business, but it's different. It's like more pessimistic, more like gray, kind of, right? So that influence was very positive for me. Then I had to make a very important decision, because the company that I was leading was merging with another company, and I was leading that merge. And both entities wanted me to be the CEO of the new entity, the resulting entity after the merge. That implied that I had to commit to stay with them for 3 to 5 years so that I could integrate that merge and I could make sure that the company was growing appropriately. And I started having doubts, like, I don't know if I have it in me, you know, to do this to myself again, to go through this 3 to 5 years of leading this company. On one end, I thought, oh, right, I'm 35, 36, and I made it. You know, I'm the CEO of a global company. I'm going to be this super executive. On the other end, I said, oof, again. And that prompted me to explore, you know, can I do something else? And I started having conversations with a person who passed, sadly, Jeff Klein, who was one of the founders of a movement here in the U.S. that's called Conscious Capitalism, a movement that aspires to increase the quality of the way we do business into like a more conscious, more respectful, more humane, more loving, more purposeful way. And I kind of like dumped all my frustrations on him in several conversations about how I disliked the way we did business and how we disliked the way we treated each other in the business world, and like how I thought that we could do better. And he said, yeah, that's great, but what are you going to do about it? And that kind of like was a pivotal moment. Like he empowered me. Like he said, you can do something about it. Then my meditation teacher also around that same time started pushing me. Like, why don't you start teaching meditation to others? Like you cannot learn much more from me. What you can learn now, you're going to learn if you start teaching other people. And there was all this confluence of being inspired by this entrepreneurial spirit, empowered by this colleague, like to think that I could do something to make the business world better, my teacher. Then I enrolled into a coaching school, and halfway into the program, I realized this is it. This is what I can do to get out of the business world as an executive and also start doing something that is going to be more meaningful to me, which is to help to create a business ecosystem that is more compassionate and more loving and more humane. And the rest is history. I stepped out of the deal and I moved back to Ohio with Manda, and I started coaching people.
It sounds meant to be. Mm-hmm. How good did that feel?
It felt really scary, but yeah, really good.
Right. That's when you know you're in the right place. That's I truly believe that. Mm-hmm. When there's a fear and an excitement that you can't kind of decipher between which one's screaming louder, that's a moment that I feel like you should pay a lot of attention to.
Ready to elevate your self-care game? Boss Gal Beauty Bar is a modern med spa offering everything from cosmetic injectables, lasers and microneedling, to medical-grade facials and skincare. Conveniently located in Clintonville, Grandview, Powell, and Easton, making self-care a priority has never been easier. Use code CROFT for $25 off your first visit.
Certainly felt like guided in some way. Like this is the right thing to do. Mm-hmm.
So today, you work with basically business leaders. Mm-hmm. So a leader of, it doesn't have to be a CEO, right? Or does it?
Most of them are
CEOs. Okay.
Founders of companies, entrepreneurs, and CEOs.
And when these CEOs come to you, what do you usually find as the common threads? Mm-hmm. Burnout, not feeling great about how they're doing, treating other, like what is a list of sort of commonalities that they come in with?
I work with very special people. And I think these individuals, they really are invested in their own growth. They really want to be their best self, their best version of themselves. They are actively looking to improve themselves. And because of that interest, they've explored the things in themselves that they think could be better. Some of them, they arrive with like, I have a lot of mental chatter and like, I don't know how to control that, or that it's having a very negative impact in my leadership style or in my life. Can you help me get like my mind more calm? Some others talk about their emotions more, like I'm too anxious, or I have difficulties responding sometimes the way I want to situations. And when I'm under pressure, when I'm under challenge, like I overreact sometimes, or I say things or do things not in the way I want. I would like to be more the owner of my response in how I present myself sometimes. Some others literally describe how they feel that they are getting in the way of the growth of their companies, and they acknowledge that they need to revisit themselves as a person, like how can I improve, how can I grow, because they realize that the growth of their companies is going to be a reflection of their own growth. And maybe they're not worried anymore about, do I have a company or not? Like, most of my clients are mature business people that, like, their companies have already been in the world for some time. And it's not like they've overcame already that initial state of like surviving, mm-hmm. and getting this company into a profitable rhythm. And that kind of plateau, like, starts, what do I need to grow this company to the next level, you know? And then they start observing themselves and say, like, maybe what do I need to do personally so I can grow this company to the next level? And they start to bump into some of their limitations, psych, mental patterns, emotional patterns, things that could be improved. Mm-hmm. Some others, because of they reached that point of like, my company is going well, they feel maybe a little bit lost in life. Like, how can I find a sense of purpose in all of this? Because I was so worried before growing this thing that now that it's grown and is out of the sphere of danger, so to speak, like, I don't know, what do I need to do anymore? Like, how do I interpret life, you know? So there's a little bit of everything.
I assume you're busy.
I am busy, yes.
Like, are you up to your eyeballs in CEOs?
Not this year, but I have been, yes. Mm-hmm.
And is it just you?
Yes, just me, yeah.
What is an average engagement? So if a CEO knocks on your door, mm-hmm. how long will they be with you, give or take?
I don't take clients that are not able to commit to work at least a year.
I'd be like eternity, Juan. I think it's eternity with you. Mm-hmm. I don't know how anybody could quit you.
I kick them out sometimes.
I was going to say, I'm already soaked. I'm just sucked right into your vortex. Tell me, Juan. Tell me what I need to do. Mm-hmm. I'm in.
Yes.
No, so it's a year?
A year minimum, yes.
And then you basically say, like, I can't help you anymore.
It depends on the process that I'm leading. Depends on the particular person. With some people, I work with several years. But, like, if I see that I'm becoming an obstacle and they're becoming somehow dependent, or like, then I need to stop the relationship. Like, what matters to me is to help you integrate this way of life, mindfulness, how to integrate, think of it as if you were migrating your operating system from the computer. Like, I teach you what this is all about, and then I coach you to help you integrate it into your personal relationships, into the way you lead your business. And that might take for some people a few months, or for others a couple of years. But once that's done and I see that the person know what they're doing, I think I need to start removing myself so this not becomes like a dependency.
Do you ever have to fire anyone? Like, get out of here, you're not for me?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Well, what's a signal there for you to, like, what's a red flag?
Mm-hmm. It used to happen more in the past, where like I would take clients that I should have never taken on.
Did you feel it in your gut initially, and you didn't listen?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I was less mature as a coach, and then like I just simply took as many clients as I could, and I learned the hard way that I need to. It's like a romance, you know. You need to feel something. And I become much better at understanding what is going to make the coaching relationship successful. And if I don't see those parameters, like I need to understand the way the person talks. I need to understand how they communicate, how they express themselves. I need to understand the core work that needs to be done with this person. Even when that core work that needs to be done has nothing to do with what they're saying that they want. Mm. Like I need to see, what is it that I need to help this person do? And then I need to be honest and say, like, can I help this person do that? And if those elements are there, then I take them and then things go very well. I haven't had to fire anybody in a long time. Yes. But sometimes, you know, people were not ready for the work.
They weren't ready for the one.
They were not ready for the work. And they thought they were. And I wanted to believe that they were ready because they said all the right things, but they were not ready. And I knew. But I just like entered the relationship nonetheless. It's like when you see, oh, this person, you know, they drink too much, and when they drink too much, they say things and do things. But nonetheless, I'm going to go out with them.
Yep.
Right? You could see the red flag from the day one, but you ignored it.
Yep.
So that's what I did as a more immature coach.
In these engagements, is it an emotional thing? Like, are there a lot of tears and things that come up? Is there any yoga involved, or this is just meditation? Mindful?
There's no yoga, but it's not just meditation. We do other things as well.
Are you allowed to talk about them, or is that more the secret sauce once you get behind the wand wall?
Mindfulness is not meditation. Like, mindfulness includes like a wider variety of exercises and practices that is not just meditation. So meditation is one part of it, but you have to learn to do other things with your attention and your intention. And those are part of the exercises that I will help someone do.
Can you give me one that I can do? Or is that not even, can you not give one?
It because doesn't really it apply doesn't tie to something that you could do right
just
now.
Just trying to become a better person, Juan.
Become present and manage your emotions consciously. So yes, part of the work has a lot to do with becoming present in your emotional state and learning how to manage your emotions and how to heal some of the emotional pain that we all carry with us in life. You know, like our life journeys have left scratches and bruises in everyone's heart. Mm. And we tend to ignore some of that pain that we've accumulated, put it in what I call the emotional basement. You just throw it in there. And then every time that life reminds you that you have that with you, then you try to ignore it, or you numb yourself, you eat a cookie, you get a glass of wine, whatever you can do so you don't experience that. I take my clients there because for you to have a healthy and joyful life, you need to learn how to clear and process all of that. And that is not pretty and is not comfortable. So yes, there are lots of tears, plenty of times. And like every process I coach has its moments of crisis, and That's why I ask everybody to pay me in advance. So they don't give up when we go to the Rocky Mountains.
That's actually a good point because you're committed. You're committed.
Yes.
But you're right. You do have to clean out the emotional basement because that's always there sitting waiting for you. It doesn't go away.
Yes.
The more you brush under the rug, it's just getting lumpier and lumpier. Mm-hmm. I totally agree with that. But it's very easy to do.
I think nobody taught us how to manage those things, you know? So, yeah, how are we going to face it or process it or clear it, you know, if we lack the skills and culturally, you know, we don't talk about it or we support each other in those processes. So, yeah.
So before I go into these random weird questions of mine, do you have anything else that you would want people listening to know in terms of what you do, how to engage, anything you'd want to say before we close out the one conscious coaching part?
No, I just think if anybody listening has resonated with some of these, like in a way, like, oh, maybe there's something for me there, I would invite them, you know, to keep exploring that. Go to my website, see if there's something there for you, and don't ignore that voice.
What's your website?
Juan-Alvarez.com.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Juan, let's talk about meditation. Curious what your longest meditation practice, like how long have you sat at one time?
I sat, and by the way, like nobody should take this as a metric of like a good meditation practice or not.
Right.
But when I was training with the monk, I sat for 8 or 9 hours.
Of course you did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you guys didn't speak.
No, it was meditation.
I know, like, but you didn't even go like this. Like, so if I was meditating with a monk and were your eyes closed?
Mm-hmm.
I would have been like, that's what I would do. And that's what I did in Bali. I would open my eye and I would be like, is anybody else curious what's going on? See, I wasn't being mindful.
Right.
And I would get into it. Now, wait, so when you did 8 hours, was the monk up front like, look, we're going to do 8 hours. Like, this is going to go on for this long? Okay, so it was like an 8-hour thing. Mm-hmm. And did any part of you think to yourself, like, holy shit?
All the time.
Okay.
Yes. And body pain and what am I doing here?
Okay.
Am I going crazy?
Thank God.
Some other moments of like profound alignment, that in and out, I was way less experienced back then. And also, I don't think that it's necessary, you know, to practice that way. Or to learn that way. I don't teach that way, certainly, you know. But that's the way he learned, my teacher. So that's what he was providing to us.
Well, it's kind of cool for you to be able to look back on that and be like, yeah, I did that once. I mean, not that you're not telling anyone, yeah, you need to meditate for hours for this to work. But it's kind of cool to be able to, like, just like you said, like, if you would say I did a triathlon or I'm an Ironman or something, you're like, I meditated for 8 hours. It's pretty neat.
Yes, it's an experience.
Yeah. So, okay, here's a random question. Do you ever get angry or do you ever raise your voice?
Oh, absolutely.
You
not
do?
Raise my voice.
You don't like yell or argue? Like, even with your wife, like if you guys get into an argument, are you ever like, be quiet or I don't want, like, do you ever lose your temper? Are you always in this steady state of like whatever this euphoric energy is that you're presenting?
No. I'm a normal person and I get triggered and I get frustrated and I get angry sometimes. What this practice does is that it helps you become very aware of what you're going through and take care of yourself. So when I was younger, I would get angry and yell. And sometimes I was even very aggressive and I would project all my anger onto other people. And I was a difficult person to be around. Now I don't get angry as often, but when I do, I'm aware of it and I can take care of myself so I don't dump my negativity onto others. And it's rare, but it happens that I lose control and then I will maybe say something or be more obviously frustrated. You know, I'm not a superhuman person or anything like that. I'm just trained to observe myself, to be present with what happens within me, and to regulate my experience and take care of myself rather than vomit, you know, my emotions out there, or let my emotions kidnap my behavior. Yeah.
Speaking of taking care of yourself, how do you look so good?
Do I look good?
You look really good. You look like a young boy. Like, I'm trying to figure this out.
Oh,
I'm like,
gosh.
Has Juan, like, what is going on? Okay, do we have a skincare regimen?
Mm-mm.
What do you wash your face with? Just regular soap and water?
I don't wash my face.
You just, when you shower, it just gets...
Yeah, like when I'm in the shower, of course, with soap.
Yeah, you have you look really good. So do you exercise?
I do exercise every day.
Mm-hmm. What do you do?
I love yoga. I walk.
How often? Like, how long do you walk?
35, 45 minutes minimum, up to an hour and a half or so.
I think you eat really well.
I do eat very well, yes.
To the point where I'd want to, you'd make me angry.
Ah, maybe.
Because I get a little, I don't know if it's jealous or I get a little angry when people are a little too clean because I want to be that clean and I do eat well, but then I go for like, you know, some dirty things on the side.
I don't say no to anything. No, in that regard, I pay a lot of attention to what I eat, mostly because I needed to. I had some gut issues in the past, which prompted me to learn about nutrition and how to overcome those difficulties. And then I think kind of entered in that way of eating, and I love it. Mm-hmm. But I don't say no to like Jenny's ice cream every now and then, or some chocolate.
Who doesn't love a good Jenny's ice cream? So, okay, give me, what would you eat in a typical day? What did you eat already before coming here?
Today, I just ate a banana and some almonds in the morning.
After you meditated?
Yes.
And did yoga?
No, I'm so not just doing yoga much lately because I've had an injury in a shoulder.
Okay, so this morning, did you just meditate?
Yes.
For how long?
35 minutes.
Was there anything else involved in that routine? Was there journaling? Was there hydration with a lemon? I mean, I want to know anything you did.
I wake up and I drink normally a glass of water.
Okay.
No lemon, but just like a glass of water.
You're certainly not scrolling Instagram in
not
the morning.
Okay. After I've meditated, I try not to use my mind too much.
Okay.
Then I meditate and then...
You eat the banana, you eat the almonds.
Yeah.
And
cup
you do
of coffee.
Okay, good. Do some work.
Mm-hmm.
Then what will you eat the rest of the day? Walk me through the eating for the rest of the day.
Most of what I eat are veggies, like a lot of veggies, like cauliflower and broccoli and salad and all sorts of like grilled or in the oven.
Mm-hmm.
Combined with some grains like quinoa or rice or farro or something like that. Think of it as a bowl.
Yeah.
I eat bowls all the time. And then some protein like chicken, tofu, most likely. And that would be my regular meal. I eat now in the cold season a lot of veggie soup at night. With leafy greens, kale or something like that.
And damn you, Juan.
Some potatoes and carrots and curry. And yes.
So nothing processed at all?
Oh, no.
No like no box of Cheez-Its somewhere hanging out?
What about
a snack? Like, let's say you get a hankering for something at night, like a snack or something.
For snacking, I would have hummus with tortilla chips.
So what is your vice? Like, what's a thing you can say that you've eaten that's like really like dirty?
I have a nightly affair with a Michelle.
What's that?
It's a granola brand. Oh. My wife and I joke every day.
I love this nightly
every
affair.
Night,
okay.
I have a nightly affair with Michelle.
Is it just tell me what
granola brand from Maryland. Very, very, very good, high quality. And I love the company because they do everything right in terms of diversity and environment and everything. So I get a little bowl of that with yogurt and blueberries and some honey.
You're going to live to be 600. What else you got in there? Like, what other things are you doing? Are you doing sauna? Are you doing like anything else you can think of, like in your day where you're like, I've got this little secret that I do that you feel like is helpful to you looking like literally like you're 32.
Oh my gosh, you're making
me
blush.
I can't be the only person that tells you this.
No, I don't get it often, no. Thank you.
And okay,
you're
well,
building
I'm,
my ego.
I'm here
quite
for
a bit.
It because I can't you. Believe it.
I think, honestly, I was listening to a doctor talk the other day, very inspiring, doctor from Spain. Like, what is the worst illness of our time, he said. He was asked, and he said, stress. Stress is so bad for you, you know. And also, it raises your cortisol levels, which is a hormone that we have that diminishes your immune system. You're more prone to get sick when you're stressed. And I think that my secret weapon for health is the practice too, because I'm not very stressed. I live a very peaceful life. So I think that preserves my body perhaps and makes me not age that fast or something. I don't know, but like I think not experiencing a lot of stress and not experiencing difficult internal situations is very good for your health.
Yeah, it must be.
Also, I take a massage once a month.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because I do accumulate some stress, also some tension sometimes, of course. Yeah.
What other vices do you have? Do you do like any trash TV? I know you got to be scrolling the gram sometime. You don't get on social media at all.
I do, but I do it for like professional purposes, but I don't enjoy it that much. I'm active on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And I write and I post things and I interact with my community there.
You journal?
Vices. Yes, I journal every morning. Very, very, very important for me. I love writing in general. Vices. I don't know what to tell you.
Will you adopt me? Juan? I love you, Juan.
Can
I come? Can I come over? Tell Manta I want to come over to your house. No, this has been awesome.
It was very, very easy. Very, very.
It was lovely.
Joyful.
Yeah. I'm so happy you could come.
Me
and
too.
I've learned so much. And
you
the net of it
questions.
Is, I just need to do better.
Uh huh.
That's what it is. You, I'm gonna see if you'll take me on as a client.
Of course. You have this ability, you know, to take. You've made aspects of myself come out that I don't normally come out with other people.
I love that. That's my whole
that's
goal.
That's a talent,
right? That's actually the highest compliment because I don't want to sit down with people and sort of rinse and repeat. And there's so much to people. So my goal, I wanted you to laugh.
Uh huh.
And I was like,
you succeeded.
Well, thank you, Heather, for this, you know, bringing together of me and Juan. I will never be the same.
Thank you so much,
I will never
Heather,
be the same
thank
again.
Thank you so much, Carrie.
And with that, if you're still out there following your girl, follow me on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. And until next time, calm down, will ya? Hire Juan and keep moving, baby.
Thank you.
Thank you, Juan. That was
so lovely.